High Surf Advisory is coming.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, and you are invited to call in with your questions. You're, besides the 800 number, your local numbers are 247-7282 and 353-4674. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us today. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
Good to have you with us. What are we talking about today?
Talking about small claims court jurisdictional issues. You know, there are a lot of folks out there who have small legal matters, jurisdictionally small amounts.
The people's court.
The people's
as
court.
As we came to know it. Yeah.
And there's confusion about, you know, how I access that court. What happens if I've been brought to that court as a defendant? What happens if I bring an action in that court? How does that work? What do I need to bring to court? How do I need to be prepared?
Do I need an attorney for it?
Do I need an attorney? So we're going to start with small claims, and then we're going to work our way up through the state court system into district court, superior court. Those are the three trial court levels. And then we'll talk a little bit about the two courts of appeal, being the North Carolina Court of Appeal and then the Supreme Court of North Carolina, the highest appeals court.
Now, the small claims court, isn't it also called magistrate's court? Or,
it is, yeah. Magistrate court.
Yeah.
And, of course, some of our listeners already know that this is kind of very much the place where landlord-tenant disputes kind of begin and hopefully maybe sometimes end. Eviction issues, any issues concerning, you know, apartment rentals and house rentals, and many times these are beginning in the magistrate court. And there are even some forms that we will talk about that are issued by the Administrative Office of Courts, known as AOC, that are available for certain, you know, just run-of-the-mill kind of things that are very, very typical, like, for instance, just failure to pay rent, failure to return the security deposit. Those kinds of things are there, and the answer to the question is that absolutely, you know, anyone can go to this court and can set forth their complaint, their cause of action, their beef, if you will. The limit on the amount in controversy is $5,000.
Used to be $1,000, didn't it?
It did, and then $2,500. It really has increased. And so that's a good thing. $5,000 is a right. Is the right good, you know, chunk of controversy, let's face it.
Yeah.
And you do not have to have an attorney. And I would say that most folks or many folks in the magistrate court do not. They set forth their cause of action, on some pleadings. And of course, the defendant then sets forth their response, if you will, their defense, their side of the story. The magistrate judges are aware of the fact that these folks are not represented by an attorney, and the rules of evidence are somewhat relaxed in this, courtroom, applied kind of generally. And many, many disputes in our community are able to get resolved in this court.
Now, is this does this have a regular session? The court that has
they meet about once a week. Let's talk about Carteret County, since this is where we're located as far as the radio program goes. They meet usually. They have sessions on Thursdays, and they set these sessions so regularly because the statutes allow for a very quick hearing with regard to summary ejectments, meaning evictions. The statute allows for you, you know, upon service, to basically get that hearing, you know, right away. There's an interest in the Landlord-Tenant Act in obviously preserving the right of the owner of property to be able to get the highest and best use out of that property. And if someone's renting that property not paying rent or under, under a rental agreement not paying rent, then that's not a highest and best use. So we have a pretty quick remedy in the small claims court with regard to summary ejectment.
So if you believe you're owed money, there are some forms to fill out. You start there.
I think the best place to start would be to, you can either go on to the AOC, Administrative Office of the Courts website. You could do a little bit of independent research there. There's some form links there There's information regarding small claims court there.
Mm-hmm.
But you also may go simply to the courthouse where you think that you would bring the action.
Right.
The clerks of court are able to help you with regard to those forms, even helping you fill out those forms
mm-hmm.
With regard to small claims court. When we talk about the higher courts, district court, superior court, the clerks really are somewhat reluctant and should be to get involved in the complexity of those courts with regard to pleadings because they don't want to be involved in the unauthorized practice of the law. They're not supposed to do that.
Sure.
But that small claims court really is the people's court.
Mm-hmm.
So the clerks at the various courthouses are very good at helping people get into the court, understand what documents they have to file before there's a setting, and even the court personnel give notice to the defendant of when the hearing is.
Mm-hmm.
So basically just, you know, check that AOC website if you have questions about it. And number two, you know, go talk with the clerk about, you know, bringing your action.
Mm-hmm.
There's a filing fee for it. My paralegals do that, so I don't know the exact number. It's around $100
mm-hmm.
As far as the filing fee goes. Then there's a service fee as far as if you're serving the person by sheriff. I think that's $30.
Can you add all that into your complaint?
Yep. The prevailing party almost always gets cost.
Mm-hmm.
Cost normally is not going to include your attorney's fees
mm-hmm.
unless you have a provision like in a lease agreement or a contract that allows you to recover attorney's fees as a part of your judgment.
Right.
So, but hey, in most cases, you can go to small claims court without an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ben, let's talk about, and I need Wes's help here as well because he's our litigator, but some of the kinds of cases. I mean, and we mentioned landlord-tenant,
mm-hmm.
but there are lots of other things. I mean, for instance, I mean, suppose you have a problem with certain services that you have received,
mm-hmm.
That you bought a product and it's not performing like it was supposed to perform, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you purchased, you know, a vehicle, and the vehicle is, of course, it would have to be a used vehicle, obviously,
right.
at, you know, $4,000, and
sure.
and of course, you know, it was misrepresented. I mean, it doesn't have to be a landlord-tenant matter.
Mm-hmm.
It can be any contractual or oral agreement or failure to pay. Maybe it's just simply that. Maybe it's that, you know, you loaned your buddy, you know, $5,000, and he promised a week later that he'd pay it back, and he didn't. Well, that's breach of contract.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, small claims court could frame that action up. What are some others, Wes?
Well, certainly at the top of the list is the summary ejectment. I mean, right. we're going to see that more than anything.
Sure.
A lot of times when the summary ejectment actions are brought, I shouldn't say a lot of times, sometimes we see counterclaims.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say there's a counterclaim against the landlord for unfair and deceptive trade practices, failure to use a security deposit correctly, improper disposal of personal property left in the unit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes the magistrate finds him or herself dealing with some of these complexities and has to know the landlord-tenant law with regard to that. So when we say landlord-tenant or summary ejectment, sometimes it could get a little bit more complicated than just a simple rental situation.
Yeah.
So that's part of it.
You hire a repair person to do work?
Absolutely. It's really any jurisdictional matter under $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And even if the amount is over $5,000, you can bring your action in small claims court, but you can only recover five.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the way, the system, you know, works with regard to that. So you might make the decision if you're owed $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 to, instead of hiring counsel, go ahead and take your shot at small claims court.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I say take your shot, what I mean by that is that in most courts, you don't just throw it out there and see what happens, because once you've done it, it's done. Once
mm-hmm.
you have your trial, you're subject to res judicata, which means a thing resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's over. You can't do it again. But in small claims court, because a lot of times, of course, it's the people's court. We don't have the right to a jury.
Right.
The pleadings are very minimal. We don't even have to file an answer before
mm-hmm.
we bring a counterclaim. Real simple stuff that at the conclusion of that, any party has 10 days to file an appeal de novo. This is not a review of what happened in magistrate court. This is a start over.
Mm-hmm.
This is a do-over in district court. So
right.
That's where we move after our small claims court. So you kind of
statements made during the small claims court may not even be considered.
They wouldn't be considered.
Uh-huh.
It's a new situation. I mean, you can try to impeach someone with something that they said in the
sure.
original hearing, but you know, you really start anew
mm-hmm.
with regard to that trial de novo.
Now, who hears these cases?
The magistrate court cases would be heard by our multiple magistrates here in the jurisdiction wherever that the case is brought. The case has to be brought wherever the defendant resides, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah, uh-huh. Which is very important. I've had multiple cases before where I have maybe a local plaintiff and,
mm-hmm.
and it's a small amount in controversy and the defendant lives
somewhere else.
New Hanover County or Craven County or Onslow County or wherever. Well, we have to bring that claim in the county where the defendant resides.
Okay.
So that's an important point, and you would see that if you looked at, I think, on that AOC website. I think there's some information about that.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll come back with more here on Coastal Daybreak, talking about the People's Court, the Small Claims Court. And if you would like to join us, 800-818-2255, and ask your questions, see whether or not maybe your instance is worthy of bringing up, and we'll talk about that. Also, you can reach us in our local numbers, 247-7282, 353-4674. You can go to their website at harvellandcollins.com, and we'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Every Tuesday morning, we bring you Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. We're talking about the People's Court and the sort of the process you go through. So what, Wes, what should somebody do? They're going to bring an action. They filled out all the paperwork. Then what do they need? What do they need to do?
Well, they'll be given notice of when the hearing will take place.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if you're the plaintiff, it's your duty to put on your evidence before the magistrate regarding whatever you think you know, your issue is, whatever you think the claim is. We've been talking about summary ejectment cases. So obviously, whenever you have a lease, it's a good idea to have it in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you end up in small claims court and you don't have a lease in writing, then it's, you know, it's verbal. And
mm-hmm.
we're trying to
and
prove
landlords are going to be favored, I would think.
Yeah, and we're having to prove our case with regard to what, you know, the verbal agreement was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we may be able to prove that verbal agreement based on like checks that were paid, that were
mm-hmm.
marked rent, these kind of things to show what the rent was and when it was paid and how often it was paid and those kind of things. But my goodness, isn't it easier to just hand up to the court the lease agreement?
Yes.
So
right.
You need to have a good, clean copy of that lease agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to have a lease agreement, of course, that's signed by both parties. You would be surprised at how many times, you know, folks come in, sit down and talk about their rental situation. They say, well, I sent the lease agreement to them and I'd signed it and they never sent it back.
Right.
And that was 2 years ago.
Right.
Well, they're not going to sign it now. So, you know, you need to have your signed lease agreement. Okay.
Just like getting your car fixed. I mean, people will want you to sign authorization for the repairs, right?
That's right.
So, you know, those are things that also end up
that's
in a
right.
legal.
In any other legal documentation that you think might have anything to do with your case, get it in nice, pretty, proper form.
Mm-hmm.
No, not crumbled up papers. I mean, something that the court can easily sink their teeth into, easily read, easily, you know, understand.
Well, this really fits both sides, though, plaintiff and
absolutely,
defendant.
Absolutely. But I'm talking about the plaintiff on the front end because they have the burden of proof.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then the defendant responds. Now, sometimes in landlord-tenant cases, of course, we have the claim that we've used some of the security deposit because there was damage to the unit beyond normal wear and tear.
Right.
Well, if you're going to seek that claim, you're going to need some photos.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need potentially an opinion from someone with regard to what it will cost to repair that carpet or that wall or that door that was destroyed
mm-hmm.
or the pet that tore up the furniture, if the furniture is part of what's being rented. You know, whatever you're claiming, you've got to have evidence to show to the magistrate as to what the damage was, and then you need to have an opinion from someone who can give you an expert opinion
mm-hmm.
as to what it costs to repair these things. You probably are not going to get very far by going in and guessing before the magistrate what it will cost to repair the items. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you need to think about, you know, your documentation, your testimony, okay? You need to be specific with regard to your testimony and not waver with regard to that. Mm-hmm. You need to think about, before you go to court, what happened what the issues were.
Say you're a defendant in a landlord case, and you're saying that your landlord abused their privileges, like coming into the property or entering the property in proper time. So I think, do witnesses help?
Absolutely. You need to line up your witnesses. I mean, if you have a couple witnesses, next door neighbors, friends, family, you know, who know about this, then of course you need to give them advance notice of when it is and talk to them about coming to court and testifying for you.
Right.
Any documentation, photographs, any kind of documentary evidence, put it in nice, pretty, pristine form so the court can understand it and see
it. On this level, though, is a magistrate generally fairly lenient about how that that evidence is offered or procedures and things like that?
Well, absolutely.
I would say lenient, but I would also say it somewhat depends. I mean, you know, there's a practical reality here that there are a lot of cases, and the magistrate just cannot allow folks to go on and on all day long on one or two cases when you've got 200 cases. So, I mean, what I have often heard from clients is that, you know, and that leads us back to this appeal period, which maybe we can end on today because we need to we need to talk about that again. But Ben, what I'm getting at here is the client will say, "Well, he wouldn't hear me on that. She didn't listen to that. She didn't want to see that."
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is somewhat like the Judge Judy court. I mean, it's right to the heart of it.
She may only hear two cases a half hour.
Let's get right to the juggler here and see what we can do to resolve it. So there is leniency, but yet there's also, you know, a practical reality that we've got to move these cases.
All right, we'll talk about the appeals process for a couple of minutes, too, when we come back in just a minute here. Remember, go to the website at harvellandcollins.com to find out lots of great information, past shows, lots of newsletter information as well, too. And you can also call them at 726-9050. Welcome back to the program here. Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins. And you mentioned, Cecil, again about the appeals process.
Yeah, let's review that again. These cases kind of flesh themselves out, if you will, in the magistrate court, and then there's a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that decision will become a final judgment if it's not appealed within 10 days. And the importance of this 10-day period is that if there is an appeal by either side, the case is heard brand new, all new again. No prejudice because of what the judge decided, the magistrate court decided a week or two ago. You know, new evidence, new pieces of paper, new testimony, whatever. It all starts over again, okay, at the next court level. And so there really is no disadvantage to folks going to this court initially and kind of seeing what each other have to say. Kind of, as you will, you know, flesh out all the facts, the documents, the copies of things. What do you have? What do you not have? Kind of see what the witnesses are going to say. There's no disadvantage to this because if the case does not conclude to your favor, you have the right to completely start the case all brand new without any prejudice whatsoever at the next level. Now, our last word of the day is if you don't, and there's a judgment is a judgment, and it doesn't matter whether it's a judgment in superior court or a judgment in magistrate court. If a judgment goes on record that you owe $3,000 or $250 whatever the case might be, guess what? That's going to affect your credit, and it's going to affect your life. If you go to do a real estate closing, there's going to be interest on that judgment, and you are going to have to eventually, more than likely, deal with that judgment. So you can't take the attitude that, for instance, that a magistrate court judgment is not as significant or as valid as a superior court judgment, because this is not the case. A judgment is a judgment, whether or not it's a case, a judgment in superior court, district court, magistrate court. Again, once the judgment is final, once there's finality, And the appeal rights have been exhausted.
Sure, and again, this is as we we kind of all have the experience of watching these things vicariously, as you mentioned, Judge Judy or the old People's Court and et cetera. But this is a real thing. It's had a long history in the United States of the Magistrates Court, of the Small Claims Court. And this is often where people have their first interaction with the legal system.
Absolutely, and there's certainly a place for it because, you know, you get into the district court, the superior court, those dockets are busy, you know, and we need to have this public policy type court where, hey, small issue, let's get in there, get this resolved, and move on. Now, although there is the right under due process for that appeal, we really like to see these smaller issues get resolved at that small claim, you know, level. For finality, just so we can move on and get on with our lives.
Do credit card claims ever go there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A lot of times we have, you know, attorneys for credit card companies that may have, you know, 10 or 15 of these cases, and they just go, just line them all up. Now, a lot of times that happens in district court, but sometimes in magistrate court, as certainly the jurisdiction will be appropriate for that to be heard in magistrate court from a preliminary standpoint.
Again, if you want to find out more about how to get the folks from Harbell and Collins working for you on your side, you can call them at 252-726-9050. Online at harbellandcollins.com at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, 252-726-9050.